Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to the show this morning. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We welcome you in. This is the closing, getting close to the end of the eighth week of our broadcast on the Tyranny Response Network. So glad you've joined us. I'd like to remind you that our broadcast is available on the World Wide Web. You simply go to our homepage, policyofliberty.net. That's policyofliberty.net. And go down, scroll down till you find the link that says live, the word live in all caps and underlined. If you go ahead and click there, you can listen through your computer in the office or at home anywhere in the world. So if you have friends that are in California that like to get up about 4:30 in the morning, I have some that do, by the way, like to get off, get up at about 4:30, go to work by about 5, and get off by about 2 in the afternoon. And if you have other folks who might be in other states on the East Coast or Canada, by all means, email them and let them know about this great radio broadcast and the Tyranny Response Network, and have them support us by listening. And we'd encourage all of you as well to send emails to the show to questions@policyofliberty.net 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The phone lines are also open. You can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Well, today we have an exciting show, because it's always an exciting show on the Tyranny Response Network. But we are going to be discussing some deep issues once again. Remember, the stated purpose of Christian Worldview is not simply to make a commentary on the local news or the national news, as some folks do, but to look at the news that is worthy of our discussion from a Christian worldview perspective. That is, where we see the world's view, the secular humanist view, the view that's taught in government schools, coming in conflict with the Christian worldview found in the scriptures. We're able to differentiate between the two of them and talk about issues. In addition to that, we also go for some very deep questions, and there are some deep questions here on the webpage, policyofliberty.net. If you click on that link, you'll find 18 questions there that have been pre-prepared for your amusement and musement, hopefully musement more than amusement, that you'll be able to think a little more clearly, a little more deeply about issues pertaining to the Christian's role with respect to public policy, what a Christian's reaction should be, what the nature of the state is in the scriptures, and how to think more biblically about these things. We also encourage very much all of those who listen who are not Christians, because you're interested in the liberty perspective we have here. We are a very strongly free market show. People are beginning to pick up and on what's going on with our broadcast. And once again, I've been asked to do an online interview, or excuse me, over-the-air interview today with Free Market News Network out of Florida. And so we'll be doing that show and encouraging people to listen to the Tyranny Response Network via the webcast when we're doing that. A lot of people are realizing that this is a show that promotes liberty and then the truth, and holds to the convictions that the Founding Fathers did, and we are here to do precisely that. So glad that we're able to share those things with you, hoping that you'll have a better day today, thinking more deeply, especially as a Christian, and even as a non-Christian, that you'll tune in and be encouraged by what we have to say. Of course, ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, if you don't know Christ, you have no hope. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how much you understand more about markets and government and so forth. If you really don't know Christ, then you have an eternity in hell, which certainly is nothing to be rejoicing about. And if you mock and say, ha ha, can't be such a place, or this is a religious thing that's just sort of a superstitious leftover or relic of the Middle Ages or whatever it might be, think again twice. The world around you speaks to you already that God created the world, that there is a designer involved, that this is not just a chance process. But another show, another story, and in fact, probably a lot more people better qualified to talk about the details of that more than here on Christian Worldview, but I do encourage you to pursue a little bit more deeply that whole thought. If you are not a believer, you need to think more clearly about yourself, where you stand in the relation to the rest of the universe, and what the true meaning of life is. It's 46 degrees now in Greenville with light rain, and we're going to go up to a high, it looks like, of about 53 degrees today, or 52 degrees today, a little bit of rain during the day. And that's kind of a soggy day towards the end of January or end of February, but a whole lot better wintering here in South Carolina than it is in other parts of the country towards the north, where I understand they had a lot of snow just recently. Well, in current news, we mentioned that these tapes yesterday. These tapes came out from a private meeting that President Bush had with an old friend named Doug Weed. And now Weed is regretting going published with the Bush tapes. The Bush tapes seem to indicate that George Bush in his younger years took LSD, marijuana, some other things like that, and may have changed his views. Again, the media is making a big deal about this because, of course, Bill Clinton was known as the one who smoked marijuana. Again, it's odd how squeaky clean some politicians have to be morally in the minds of some people, and how they can be put down, and therefore why they need to be protected by their own party. But it is interesting that this man now no longer wants the president to be affected by what he said. So he turned over the tapes. He donated any future profits from his books to charity, and he's repentant for what he did to George Bush. I wonder if George Bush put any pressure on this old friend of his, Doug Weed. That's spelled W-E-A-D. Hard to know for sure, but it does make one wonder, doesn't it? We also have a tiger killed near the Reagan Library. Yes, a tiger. This is Moorpark, California, not too far from where the Tyranny Response Unit was years ago, just a few years ago. Authorities shot and killed a tiger Wednesday that had been roaming the hills near the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. That's just north of Los Angeles, or I guess it would technically be just west of Los Angeles. Ask yourself that trivia question once, or ask your kids, what is further west, Los Angeles, California, or Reno, Nevada? And guess what, folks? It's Reno, Nevada, because Los Angeles and that part of California really curves under, and actually Santa Barbara is far more west of Los Angeles than north, just slightly north and mostly west, and so would be the case with this area, Ventura. Okay, at any rate, the cat was shot several hundred yards from soccer and baseball fields at the edge of a housing development, said Loma Bernard, a spokesman for the California Department of Fish and Game. It's unfortunate that we had to kill it, Bernard said. It's even more unfortunate that the person who owned it didn't come forward and alert us immediately. We might have been able to capture it. Can you just imagine the phone call? Oh, you know, I've got a 14-foot-long tiger in my yard, and I just wanted to let you know he got out. Why in the world do people keep tigers in California? I don't know. Apparently, the article goes on to say later there's another guy that has a farm there that he keeps, you know, over a dozen or so of these cats. It apparently wasn't one of his that got out. But there are people who like to keep these large wild animals that are obviously potentially very dangerous to human beings. And indeed, this one almost was a real danger. This reminded me of Walter Williams' famous idea about prejudice. When in class one time, he was asked by an African American student who later left the class in disgust and never to return about prejudice and about how he was supporting prejudice policy. Walter said that prejudice is a normal behavior. It's a good behavior, and it's a behavior that all cost minimizing people pursue. And he said, if you are to leave the classroom today and you open the door and you see outside the class in the hallway a Bengal tiger sitting in the hallway, like this one here that was near the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, you have two choices. One is to rely on prejudice, that is, stereotypes or what other people have told you about tigers, generalizations about them being fierce and mean and might eat you, things like that. Or you can go and gather more information. Go and test the hypothesis, as it will, and as it were. And you may go up and pet the tiger, and, you know, stroke its chin and see if he really is mean. I mean, he, after all, might be different than other tigers. Therefore, what are you going to do? Well, most people are going to rely on prejudice, is the point. And prejudice is a good thing. We don't have all the information we need. And even though the one tiger, even this one killed near the Reagan Library, might be a good tiger and different than other tigers, We don't know that for sure. So relying on prejudice is a good thing. Interesting point that Walter brings up. And it just reminded me of that great story that I heard in class with him when I saw this tiger being killed near the Reagan Library. We've come up against a quick break, and I notice we have someone calling in on the line. If you can just hold on for us over the break, we'll be right back with you. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we have a phone call. Chuck's on the line, and we'd like to welcome Chuck to the show and see what you have to say to us this morning, Chuck.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, I wanted to tell you about a couple of things that are really encouraging me this morning. I was listening this morning. I had breakfast like 2 hours ago, and on TRN, there was an interview along with Thomas DiLorenzo. Excellent interview. I was really pleased to hear it. Heard a lot of new things and just real encouraged by it. It seemed like there was so much there. I'm going to have to hear it again. I couldn't take it all in.
Now he's the author of The Real Lincoln, and he's been lecturing. I believe that's the lecture you're referring to, where he's talking about the true views of the Republicans around the time when Lincoln started them. The radical Republicans, the view of slavery, tariffs, and so forth that led up to the war, and how it's been completely misrepresented by modern history books.
That's right. The disconnect is just astounding.
Yeah.
Once you come to understand what's there, it's fascinating how much is going on. In fact, it leads me to think that there's really even more than he says, because a country that was so steeped in freedom before Lincoln, how did they put up with what Lincoln did?
Yeah,
well, wonder.
Well, it's a great point, a great thought. In fact, I think I've mentioned on the show before that there was a great rift put between historians and economists in the 1970s when a couple of economists named Fogel and Ingerman wrote a book called Time on the Cross, and where they did economic analysis, empirical studies, showing that Uncle Tom's Cabin was absolutely blown out of proportion, and that although there might have been somebody here or there that treated slaves in that fashion, the vast majority of people treated slaves as if they were in business who owned slaves. There weren't that many people who owned slaves. It was less than 5% of the entire Southern population, except among blacks who owned other blacks at a rate of more than 28%. But what they argued was, most people, when they went out and bought a slave, they did so treating it the slave as a piece of capital, and they cared for it quite well. Did not want any harm to come to it because the investment was so great. It'd be almost as lunacy. The lunacy of beating up a slave or demoralizing or raping him regularly and so forth would almost be as nutty as you and I, Chuck, going into business, putting $100,000 in each for capital and equipment, and then going out with baseball bats and shredding the machinery the next day just for the fun of it. This simply did not happen, according to the economists, and the historians responded with a book called Reckoning with Slavery, where they were very upset with the economists and said they were wrong, and the rift has never really healed, I don't think, between the two disciplines because of that. But it just didn't make sense to economists, and then that slaves would be mistreated all the time, and it seemed empirically to be the case that they were not. So interesting artifact there of history, and what you found in the DiLorenzo book is it just confirms more of that.
Yes, and the other thing that's hard to understand is you hear similar things about even the South, that we had martial law, we did a lot of the things we said we were against, the reason we seceded, we turned around and seemed like we did to try to win the war. Because that's the nature of wars. Wars tend to cause us to give power to government that we wouldn't normally cede it.
Yeah, of course. And in fact, governments, you could look at it the other way. Governments might well use wars at various times in order to gain more power than they would normally have. Governments, remember, if we believe that government actors have self-interest motivations, not necessarily selfish motivations, but in economics, as self-interested motivations to get a greater budget or get more power or even have a higher salary or whatever it is that people want when they run for a political office, besides the euphemistic or false belief that many people have, they're there to serve the public and so forth and subdue their own personal interests. Well, we can see with this motivation that there's a driving force behind every politician to want to increase the size and scope of government, and through warfare is one easy way to do so. So it's not surprising to us that governments do this in history from an economics point of view.
It's really cautionary, isn't it?
It sure is.
Watch out when you hear this sort of thing. It's very easy to fall into the jingoism, nationalism, and want to rally around the flag and give them anything they want.
Yeah. How many rights did we lose in World War II under FDR? I mean, it was astounding, not just under World War II, but even under, in the Great Depression. Under Lyndon Johnson, you notice there was a wartime effort there as well. More things were passed that caused people to lose rights, caused extortion to increase. And this has been the history of government, the practice of government. Watch out anytime there's a crisis. Look at your pocketbooks. Available rights, because government will try to intrude and take them away during those periods of crisis when people are the most vulnerable.
Yes, these things should be ratcheted down. There used to be this concept of demobilization after a war.
Yeah.
We've almost gotten away from that, and it seems like we have really gotten away from the idea that if we gave up some rights temporarily, they have to come back.
Yes, that's right. Sad but true, Chuck, and I appreciate you mentioning that this morning. Did you have any other comments for the show?
Just one. I was reading something by Mario Russo in the Times Examiner.
Okay.
I commend anybody that gets the Times Examiner, be sure not to skip that article. It's very good. There are a lot of things you can say about the evolution argument, but he said some especially good things this week because he was talking about the fact that there are no known genetic mutations that are beneficial that lead to what you might call new features. For example, if a bug had only one eye, it would really do better with two. It never grows another eye. Hmm. It may grow a less sensitive eye to light, for example, if it needs to live in the dark. But that's a loss, not a gain.
Yes, that's a great point. I just got the Times Examiner yesterday, and I usually scour that paper cover to cover. Have not read that particular article yet, and I will do so. I appreciate you mentioning that, and it is a great point that Darwinism has so many holes in it. People have to hold on to it or something else because they do not want the alternative, obviously, the intelligent design, apparently. But if they're being honest about things, they have to sometime wake up and say, look, evolution has all sorts of, or macroevolution per Darwin has all sorts of holes and pitfalls in it that just make it unviable as a strong theory people contend that it is. Remember the National Geographic article that came out, Chuck, and there was a survey done of Americans reported in there that only 13% of people in America buy the argument that evolution occurred per Darwin or something similar. Only 13%, and more than half of the people still believe, thankfully, that God created the world. Isn't that interesting?
That's extraordinary considering the amount of indoctrination that has gone on, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess they're still not buying it, though, when that is that's encouraging. It's an encouraging sign that the public school has not had the effect that they've wanted it to in this respect, but unfortunately, those who rise to the college ranks, and people I know, my colleagues, all seem to embrace the evolutionary idea a la Darwin. So apparently in the educated elite, at any rate, they've done far better than they have with the rank and file, according to that survey, if we can believe what that says. But anyway, I really appreciate the call this morning, Chuck. We've come up against a break. If you need to, if you have another question, you're welcome to hold on during the break. Otherwise, we'll hang up for now and say goodbye and appreciate you calling the show.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Yes, indeed, hurl it with great force. The bigger the splat it makes, the better. CBS News is reporting that Jesse James rides again. I thought this was a very interesting little story here. I don't know if any of you caught it in the news last night or whenever it came out. I saw it last night. Jesse James is a Wild West legend in the making. He's the most famous James since his ancestor and namesake was roaming the West and robbing banks. And just like his long-lost relative, James has a renegade reputation, too, that he's riding all the way to the bank. He builds motorcycles, custom-built choppers that are cool, pricey, and very fast. James says his choppers can reach speeds of 140 miles per hour. Why? What if you're late, says James, who has no excuse to be late, not the way he rides. James's hometown, Long Beach, California, is a blue-collar city that fits him like a leather glove. There are speed limits and helmet laws here, but just like his outlaw relative, this Jesse lives by his rules and rides the roads as if he owns them. Well, this raises two interesting pieces for me. You may wonder why I'm reading that on Christian Worldview. Well, there are two reasons. First of all, it raises the question of whether or not a Christian should obey legislation passed down by the state regarding helmets and speed limits. And secondly, it raises some questions about the history of this ancestor of his, Jesse James. Before I go into each of those, I want to make the distinction that Hayek does and why I said legislation instead of law. We want to begin to think correctly on if we're listening to Christian Worldview, and we want to be those who love liberty and cherish it. Legislation is something that is created by the state, by the legislature, by the Congress. They are rules passed after the enactment or after the creation of the state. Law is something that exists prior to the state. In other words, things like the Ten Commandments, for instance, the rules that govern society, exist whether there is no state or even if there is no government. You could have pure anarchy in terms of a political structure and still have law. And so we need to differentiate that law, for instance, things against murder is wrong, stealing, rape. Those things have all come into play long before we had government. Think about it. Were those things wrong before the United States government was founded or before the government of England was founded? Well, of course they were. The law has always been there. So let's make a distinction in our own mind, in our own speech, between legislation and law. And that's Friedrich Hayek, the Nobel laureate who wrote Law, Legislation, and Liberty, 30 years ago, who made that distinction. I think we need to respect it. I think it's important for us to speak correctly about this. So I'm trying to in my own speech, do that, and I hope you will as well. Well, at any rate, we have here a couple things. First of all, Jesse James was a Southerner, or at least semi-Southerner. He lived on the border of Missouri and Kansas and was raided by Northern armies, Yankees, who really ravaged his home. As I understand, there were rapes committed. Most of his home was looted. They lost lots of things, even though they tried to be neutral. The family did not want to be involved in the war. Of course, Missourians typically were Southerners that wanted to, and it was a slave state, but they wanted to secede from the Union, and Lincoln drove out the legitimate government of Missouri to marshal Texas and set up his own puppet government to make sure they would not secede from the Union. But at any rate, Jesse James, it is said, after the war, had a vendetta against Northern generals and apparently only robbed banks when he did his own raids, where Northern Northern generals kept their money. He did not go and rob anybody but the looters. Now, there are some other parts of the story. People say, well, he also rode with some, was it Wild Bill Hickok, or I've forgotten who else he rode with. Maybe it wasn't Bill Hickok, but it was someone else who was clearly not of the same philosophical bent at times, so he was pretty much a criminal. Well, there's some debate over all of that, but we do know for sure that one of his main motives was to go and loot Northern generals after he was looted himself. Having said that, and you can do your own research on Jesse James, just another little piece of history that's been revised for you by the liberals and now being unrevised or sanitized or purified or brought back to the truth by the Tyranny Response Unit, we also want to ask the question for those Christians, do you have to obey the speed limit? If you're in California, you've got a motorcycle shop, do you have to wear a helmet when you get on that, whatever thing he makes, Harleys? Now, I don't ride one of these things. They look pretty, and I know some of you enjoy these kinds of bikes, especially these ones that have these engines that are bigger than that you'd find in a car. They sure look sleek. They also look to me like very dangerous, but again, I wouldn't want to prevent anyone else from riding one if they really enjoyed it. Well, would it be morally wrong for a person to do as this man has, this Jesse James? Would it be wrong for him to break the speed limit? Now, some Christians would say, absolutely. Government sets down the standard, the legislation for the speed limit. You have to obey. If you don't, you're in sin. Well, let's carry that, if that's true, let's carry that to its logical conclusion, folks. Let's say you're driving down the road and you notice the sign says 65 as the posted speed limit, and you're going 66. Do you need to repent? Well, if so, you're going to have a lot of repenting to do, and because no Christian wants to willfully live in sin. We all sin from time to time, certainly. In fact, every day in some way. But you're going to need to check your speedometer cable. You're going to have to go to great lengths to make sure that you're accurate, that your tires aren't the wrong size for your speedometer, and that you're really not going 68 when you think you're going 65, because you should not be sinning if there is indeed a moral standard set forth by the state. Now, some Christians are going to say, no, well, you know, you can't be that rigid. You have to go somewhere in between. So only if it's enforced do you have to, is it sinful? In other words, if they don't enforce 68 and a 65, then you can do that. If the cops say instead, well, you know, we're not going to get you until you go over 74 and a 65, then go up to 74 and be at peace. You're not sinning. Well, that is all obviously troubling because it's arbitrary and capricious. It also makes the law or the legislation, the so-called law, the legislation of the land regarding speed limits of virtually no effect for the Christian because it allows us to have a degree of subjectivity. It depends on each individual cop. So one cop might say, well, above 71, you're going to write you a ticket, and therefore if they write you a ticket and it's being enforced, you're sinning. Another cop might say, no, I'll let them go up 79, and it just depends on every whim of every officer. But anyway, that is one way you can handle it. The other is simply my view, I guess, that these things have no moral implications whatsoever, that you obey these speed limit legislations simply because you don't want to be hassled by the state. It's a very pragmatic response. It's a practical response. You don't want to get a ticket. You don't want to be injured by these people, and so you obey them. But it's not because you have a moral obligation to, and you're sinning by not doing it, except to the extent that By really breaking the speed limit, you might be endangering your lives, being a poor steward of your life, or being a bore testimony and not bringing glory to God, or maybe bringing wrath upon the church. But these are indirect things that cause us to sin, not the actual disobeying of the letter of the legislative body of the day. Well, we're going to talk about this some more when we get back on the Tyranny Response Network. We have to, our 8 o'clock break here we're going to take, and this is Dr. John Coben. You're listening to Christian Worldview. We'll be right back.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've been talking about whether or not Christians should obey traffic laws, so-called traffic laws, really traffic legislations, rules set forth by those who create the roads, the government, and so forth. There's some interesting questions here. First of all, theoretically, you could say, well, if government creates the roads and releases them, then they should be able to set the rules for the road. And that makes some sense. I mean, if it was a private operator, as it should be, privatized roads, we would allow those operators to compete and set their own contractual rules. For instance, if a person had a road, and he said, look, you can go any speed limit you want on here. You have to pay $100 a month to use this road or whatever it is, $100 a year. And there is no speed limit. That road would become quite dangerous in the minds of some people. Now, some people would enjoy that. They wouldn't care if it's dangerous or not. They'd want to be able to go where there's no speed limit. And they'd be willing to pay for it. But what it allows in the market is for another road to be built right alongside it. Where they actually have contractual restrictions that say the speed limit is set on this road to 65 miles per hour, and if you want to go over that, you're going to lose your privilege. Our contract will be broken because we have agreed that you will not drive over 65. But for some people, that will be a more valuable road to be on because they'll believe it's safer, and therefore in the market you'll actually have room for more than one road to be built. A complete loss of congestion and an improvement in social welfare, as we say. That's the way things would work in a free market. Government is not quite the same way, is it? Because they have a monopoly on the road. No one is allowed to build a road and compete with the government in any feasible manner, at any rate, at least in this country. It isn't. In other places, they do have private roads, but here in America, we generally do not. We have a few toll roads that are built by private industry, regulated heavily by the state. Not quite the same thing. Well, at any rate, what happens is the government sets the rules, and then the fines for speeding or reckless driving or whatever it might be are set by government and essentially are another tax. I mean, we can call it a traffic fine, a ticket, or whatever you want, but it's just another way that government collects revenue. Last I heard, and this is somewhat dated information, but if you have the updated one, please do call and let us know. We have about 25% of all police dedicated to doing traffic fines, and they wouldn't do so if it wasn't profitable for them. In other words, departments have to recognize that there's a certain number of man hours that are required to police the roads, so to speak, and they have to be able to make sure that they get at least that much back for the time and labor and expense in traffic tickets. And so the tax covers that, and probably even is profitable for departments, if you can use that sort of terminology. Now, of course, they're going to tell you, no, we're just trying to keep the roads safe. We're just doing our job. And that's, you know, economists get beyond this sort of jargon that one hears, and we go right to the core of things, and we believe that people act as self-interested actors. And then even in the police force, even in government, in anywhere, any place. So, anyway, what happens when we have a speed limit set by the state? Do Christians have to obey it? Well, they do in a practical sense, I would say, because if they don't, they have a lot of hassle. On the other hand, if you need to break it and you have a good reason to, go ahead. But even beyond that, even if you just wanted, you felt like you're going 100 miles an hour one day down the road somewhere and it seemed to you to be quite safe, well, I don't see that there's a real moral dilemma about doing so. Other Christians are going to disagree. How can you say that? You know, you can have a Christian fish in the back of your car and going 100. What a bad testimony. No, it's not, folks. This is not God's law that's being broken. It's a rule set up by men. And it's to be obeyed in a practical sense because we don't want to be harassed by the state. But I don't believe there's a moral implication that automatically is assigned to any government edict. Imagine if it were. Imagine if there was an equation between the Ten Commandments or the laws of God in the Bible, for instance, even if we were theonomists and accepted the Old Covenant laws. Imagine we had all that subset that we had to obey. In addition to that, if we had to put on equal par every legislative act, all 50,000 or whatever pages it is of the United States Code and of each state's code that you would ever go to, you would be required to know that law. And you would be required to do your best to obey that law. So if it says in Dunn, North Carolina, somewhere, some obscure city regulation that you cannot throw or spit on the sidewalk, or in Dublin, Georgia, that you can't throw stones at pigeons, and those actually are laws that are on the books, or so-called laws, legislation, then you're in sin. You would be sinning, just like committing adultery or murder or theft and so forth, if we put those on equal par. I was once driving through my subdivision with a friend of mine who's a pastor of a church, and it was a humorous story for me because he was sitting there telling me, John, if it's illegal, it's sin. If you do something that's illegal, you've sinned against God. There's a one-to-one equation between the laws of men or the legislation of men and the law of God or what God requires, because we're supposed to submit to the state, and therefore whatever they say you have to do, and if you don't, it's sin, with a very few exceptions. He always has a few exceptions, like, you know, murdering your children or not going to church or not preaching the gospel or bowing down to idols. You know, they'll name four or five things. But in general, except for those very few things, you have to obey if you're told to, and if you don't, it's sin. Well, while he was telling me this, he pulled into the subdivision where I live, and or I was living at the time, and he just rolled. I mean, he did a great roll job on this stop sign. I mean, he didn't even get down below 10 miles an hour, went right on through. He might have got down to 5, I don't know, but it wasn't a full and complete stop before the limit line where you could read the tire, the lettering on the tires. He continued through to the next stop sign, forgot to put his turn indicator on, rolled that one too. And then down the road pulled into my driveway. And after he was done with his speech telling me about whatever is illegal is sin, I asked him if he had just sinned 3 times by not obeying at least 3 infractions that I knew of, two stop sign rolls and not putting the turn indicator on 100 feet or whatever the number of feet is before the stop sign. His chin hit his chest, and he said, in good form, yes, I have sinned, and I have to repent. Well, folks, listen. I told him I thought that was an incredible amount of bondage and that he didn't sin. Certainly no one was harmed, and there was no reason he had to morally stop the stop sign or put on the turn indicator. It was just his doctrine of equating the law of men, the legislation that men come up with the moral implications of obeying the laws of God and the Scripture because of his view of the state. what we consider here a divine right view. Anyway, we come up against another break. Hope that's of interest to you. And if you're thinking as a Christian this morning, this is part of the Christian worldview. How do we handle legislation as Christians? What do we think about these sorts of things? Hope you're thinking better because of this. You're listening to Dr. John Covenant with Christian Worldview today, or Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Oh, the socialists never sleep, neither do the hard left or liberals of the world. They're always trying to advance their cause, their philosophy, trying to put it on you and force you to think the way they do. Here at the Tyranny Response Network, we're dedicated to exposing them, to helping you think correctly, and to leave off their silly games and their mind control, their mechanisms for manipulation and indoctrination, by helping you think better for yourself and understanding something of the truth. And we've done that just recently when we were talking about things like speed limits or helmet laws and things of that nature, and Jesse James, the new Jesse James of California. We also are concerned when we see the liberals rise up as they are today in the United Nations. The United Nations, according to news sources, is supporting a new campaign urging governments around the world to register every newborn child. And it's getting help from South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu. 16 years ago, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child told countries to register every baby immediately after birth. Every nation has ratified the convention except two, the United States and Somalia. The psychology is to make us look backwards, as what my research assistant points out. Well, Somalia is backwards in the sense of being poor, but they may get better now that they have anarchy and got rid of their state. Now, I'm not saying, remember, that anarchy is always the best solution. In fact, it's not. I believe that a constitutional republic is the best solution. But I'll tell you this, folks. If I had a choice between about 90%, maybe more than that, of all the governments that have existed for the last 3,000 years, or anarchy, I would take anarchy, hands down, because totalitarianism, aristocratic sort of rule, the socialist rule, the communist ideas were so harmful, so devastating to human life that I would prefer the anarchy. And Somalia right now has anarchy, so there's some hope. It's not as good as it could be, but at least it's better than it was, and things might actually improve in that country. So keep your eye on Somalia to see if they actually can pull themselves out of this before a state gets in there again and starts messing things up. Well, of course, we're also concerned about Tutu and the United Nations trying to register every baby born. I think this is a wrong thing to do. I think it's a bad thing to do. Anytime we give the state more control over our lives, we lose liberties, and we give to the state it's an undue benefit. It's something it doesn't deserve, and certainly registering every baby in the world is far beyond what states are called on to do. Remember, well, at least as governments, states do all these kinds of things all the time, but as far as government goes, governments are only there to protect us from predators. They are there to protect us from those who would deny us our rights, bring to justice those who do, and help us to overcome evil sweeping through our land. Well, this reminds me of another story that's come up again today that we've had on recent shows, and that is the testing of the bird flu vaccine. You know, I think we've made it pretty clear on the show before that reactive government policy can entail protection of any kind of predator. It doesn't have to be human. It could be the tiger, for instance, that was shot today near the Ronald Reagan Library without testing first whether it was a mean tiger or not, just this big old tiger somebody let out of his yard. Somebody noticed it was strolling around the back fence, you know, at the back of the tiger, lurching over the height of the fence, saw it strolling through there and thought, this isn't a good thing. I think we'll call the authorities. And they did, and the authorities shot the cat. Poor cat, but still a menace to human beings living there in the Los Angeles area. Cat is dead. Well, at any rate, this is part of reactive public policy. We react against those who would seek to harm us, whether it be another human government or a terrorist or a criminal, a tiger, or even a microparasite like the flu virus. I guess that's not a parasite, is it? But, well, forgive the technical incompetence of the Tyranny Response Unit when it comes to biology, physiology, and these sorts of things. But the point is, whatever it is, this small thing that makes you sick and get the flu, this virus, is an invader and could be something, a proper role for government. So they're preparing to test some flu vaccines. They're reminding us that in 1918, the Spanish flu, swept the world. 18 million people died. 500,000 Americans were killed, and nearly half of them were young, healthy adults. Just because the flu vaccine changes every year, the flu vaccine, but also the flu virus itself changes every year, leads to making it very difficult to create a new vaccine. You have to actually start early, create the new vaccine for the following year. Well, they found this chicken virus or bird virus in many countries in Asia. Including Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Japan, Laos, and South Korea, Thailand, and Vietnam. And they're concerned that it will be spreading here to North America and could cause a worldwide problem once again. Well, on the one hand, I'm concerned that government may just be fear-mongering again, may just be saying a bunch of things like this because they want to increase their own power. But on the other hand, I do think that there are legitimate problems that the government is called upon to address, and this may be one of them. So we will be watching here at Christian Worldview this particular aspect of state policy or government policy closely. At any rate, moving along, we have a few other interesting things that have come up. One I want to switch gears to for a moment is in the Times Examiner this week, Walter Williams' article. If you don't get the Times Examiner, you need to do so. Before April 1st, you can pick up a subscription to the Times Examiner for just $20 a year in-state and $22 out-of-state. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville, 29609. The phone number there is 864-268-0576. It's 864-268-0576. You can also pick up a copy for 50 cents, as I said, or get the subscription. Either way, you're going to have a great deal of editorials and opinions and commentary that is well worth the money. Can you imagine just, you know, what is that, 40 cents a week or something like that? It's really a cheap buy for what you get. You get all sorts of good stuff in here. Specifically on page 10 this week, you'll notice not only my article about is the lottery immoral, but also a large ad favoring the Tyranny Response Network and featuring Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coven. We'd like you to encourage you to get a copy of the Times Examiner and get several copies. Go ask Bob Dill for several and give them to some friends. Point them to this advertisement about the Tyranny Response Network and encourage them to listen. I want to read an article in here from Dr. Walter Williams, or at least a piece of it, but we've come up against a break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben and on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a minute, and we'll get to that article.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hey,
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
You know, right before we get to Walter Williams' column, one of my production staff just gave me the book that we read frequently here in the studio, Unusually Stupid Americans by Catherine Ross Petras. Page 171 reminds us that the IRS is rude to customers. According to Pete DuPont of the National Center for Policy Analysis, a 2001 report by the Treasury Department discovering plain old rudeness at the IRS. Treasury agents disguised as humble taxpayers were, one, left waiting in line for 90 minutes and then given a stack of papers and told to do their own homework. Number two, told that the IRS tax help office wasn't answering any more questions that day at 11 o'clock in the morning. Three, given wrong answers in well over 50% of the cases, 61 wrong answers out of 90. Well, we oppose the IRS, especially its abuses and its nastiness. The IRS is one of those great evils and tyrannies of the started in the early 20th century and has continued on to this day. Sad but true that we live in a country that has such a horrible, vindictive and venomous organization. But Dr. Coben, if we didn't have the IRS, how would we support the government? Well, friends, you would support government with one of the other 50 taxes we pay, and we certainly do not need the Internal Revenue Service to support the welfare state that we have right now, and we can just get rid of that entirely. We could support all the legitimate functions of government that we want for self-defense and reactive policy simply with a portion of the other taxes that are collected, whether it be a gas tax or a sales tax or permit or fee or whatever else there is out there. And we've read some of these 52 different taxes that they're levied upon Americans and other shows on Christian Worldview. You do not need the amount of government we have. We do not need the IRS. We do not need it collecting Social Security. These are all part of the welfare state. Bad things, and opposed to liberty and certainly opposed to the Christian Worldview. Getting to Walter's article now, it says, weak-kneed corporate CEOs. On January 20, 2005, J.P. Morgan Chase, that's a bank, announced that it had completed research to determine whether it had any links to slavery. In its website, it announced, "Today we are reporting that this research found that between 1831 and 1865, two of our predecessor banks, Citizen Bank and Canal Bank in Louisiana, accepted approximately 13,000 enslaved individuals as collateral on loans and took ownership of approximately 1,250 of them when the plantation owners defaulted on the loans." J.P. Morgan Chase went on to apologize to the American public, and particularly to African Americans, for the role that Citizens Bank and Canal Bank played during that period. They added, "Since these events took place in Louisiana, we are establishing a $5 million college scholarship program for students living in Louisiana." And Walter, of course, can get away with talking about these issues so candidly, being of the African-American race himself, and criticize. And he will go on to criticize them and say, look, these guys are weak-kneed. You get these black activist groups will come up with any reason they can to sue somebody who's got deep pockets. And the bank had just caved in, figuring, look, the $5 million tax-deductible item, in other words, really only $2.5 million or something like that, that we have to pay to this scholarship fund, gives us a little more goodwill. It's costly, but it's going to be a whole lot less expensive than having to go through the legal process, hire lawyers, and possibly face a suit for hundreds of millions of dollars to our jury award of hundreds of millions of dollars to pay back reparations to the ancestors of people who were enslaved and taken as collateral, even though it was legal at the time, as a wicked institution still, but it was legal. And Walter's getting on this bank for having being spineless and caving into the pressures of the liberal left. Very interesting article. On the front page of the Times Examiner, we have also thousands rallying for school choice, and people who are promoting the this Put Parents in Charge Act here in South Carolina. Put Parents in Charge is an act that is proposed to benefit the public school. It's there to allow homeschoolers and Christian schoolers who earn less than $75,000, the parents who would earn less than that, to get a tax credit of up to several thousand dollars off of their property taxes and or their state income taxes. And it's something that's put there to give, or what it says, restore parental control. These are the objectives, the things I just stated for this PPIC, or the Put Parents in Charge. And 4,000 people crowded the steps of the State House in Columbia, South Carolina. Unfortunately, I have to say that I'm on the other side of this issue compared to my illustrious columnists or friends there at the Times Examiner who think this is a great bill. They're looking at the idea that homeschoolers and Christian schoolers can get some money back, at least some of them, and reduce the level of extortion, which I am very much in favor of. But folks, I can't let the camel's nose into the tent, because pretty soon the whole camel will be in there. First of all, parents do not need to have control restored over their educational choice. We have complete freedom of choice right now, whether homeschool, private school, Christian school, or public school. And secondly, I do not want to help the public school. This bill is aimed at helping the public school, making it more competitive, improving its quality. Folks, the public school is our greatest enemy. It is public enemy number one, and I want to destroy the public school. If this bill actually helps them, the last thing I want to do is be in favor of it. And thirdly, I'm not in favor of the redistributive aspects it have of trying to capture corporate money, encourage it to be put into to grant or scholarship funds, and redistribute wealth at the hands of the government, or under the guidance of the government regulators. This is a socialist plan at its core, and I don't want anything to do with it. So while so many Republicans are in favor of it because it can save a few dollars on the tax bill, and it does, I think it's a sellout and a mistake to go ahead and buy into this plan when it, in effect, is just going to reduce rights, probably end up having opening the door for government to get its way in to regulate homeschoolers and people who go to Christian schools far more heavily than it does, telling them what to teach, when to teach it, how to teach it, and so forth. Don't need that. It's not worth the money. And so although I'd like the carrot, the stick is too big. Don't want it. And you heard it right here on the Tyranny Response Network that that Dr. Coben, the Tyranny Response Unit, is opposed to PPIC. May raise some eyebrows this morning, I realize, but I want you to think about clearly why my rationale, and you may come to appreciate the perspective. I'd love to see nothing less than the property tax eliminated or big credit given, but not at the cost of the children or the state getting an upper hand there. My article will appear in the next edition of the Times Examiner regarding my criticism of PPIC. And at the Sims Library, 10 o'clock in the morning, my fellow columnist Ben Graydon, as well as Juliet Kosak, will be on a group of panelists. Us three will be opposed to PPIC, and there will be three conservatives there in favor of it. Sims Library on Pelham Road in Greenville, 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday, and we'll debate this issue publicly for all who would like to come. So we'd encourage you to come to the meeting at 10 o'clock till noon, if you can make it, on Monday morning, and listen to both sides. Again, these are it's an argument among friends right now. I realize that I and and Ben and some of the others are siding with the leftists and the liberals who also oppose it because they don't believe it'll help public schooling. But we are indeed aligning with them, not because we like what they think in general, but because they happen to be right on this issue. Not for the same reasons that we've given. But nevertheless, the bill should be opposed and should be thrust down. We need another bill that's cleaner, that doesn't allow the government regulation as it would happen under this event, the PPIC. Anyway, we've come up against a break again on the Tyranny Response Network. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we do welcome you back to Christian Worldview, the last half hour of the show this Wednesday, or this Thursday morning, and the 8th week of the broadcast. So glad you've joined us, and we encourage you to encourage others to join us via the World Wide Web. Go to policyofliberty.net, our homepage. Click the link that says live and listen to your home or office on the computer. Crystal clarity and anywhere in the world or the United States. Encourage your friends everywhere to tune into the Tyranny Response Network. Just to let you know, we've been following a couple of the stories. Won't make much comment about them that relate to Christian worldview. As they become more developed, we will comment more on them. But for instance, Jeb Bush down in Florida said on Wednesday he wants to extend school vouchers to underperforming readers, even after 2 courts have said the state's existing voucher program is unconstitutional. So he's doing something similar to what's going on with the Put Parents in Charge bill here in South Carolina. Vouchers are different than tax credits. I hope you realize if you have a voucher, you're essentially getting the same amount of looting going on. People are still being stolen from in the property tax or the income tax. But then the government then is essentially redistributing that money back to people via this voucher. They can use it to as a coupon to help pay for things. And it's different than a tax credit and not as good as a tax credit as far as if you had to choose one or the other. But he's pushing for the vouchers down there. We're keeping an eye on that that story just to let you know that it's in the news. In addition to that, the Pledge of Allegiance is also coming up again. As one of my researchers has pointed out, it's the Under God section is a sort of a red herring put forth by a seemingly well-meaning fellow organization. We have to say the American Center for Law and Justice is doing a great job in many respects. But, you know, the fact of having Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance is not the most important thing, folks, because as a Christian, how can you pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America? Think about it for a minute. What is your first allegiance? It's to Christ. It's not to a flag or even to the nationalist philosophy of the United States. So I realize you can say this and say, well, I don't really mean my top allegiance. It's a secondary allegiance. Okay, there's some debate about this, but I think we get to a crisis point making too big of a deal over whether or not under God is in there. That's just my opinion. You may have a different one. You may think it's so important that we need to have this in there. I will say that there are other parts of the pledge, as some of my research staff have pointed out, that we don't care for. For instance, the idea of having the indivisible nation is certainly not something we agree with. We think we should be able to secede from the Union and be able to divide into states or even counties. That is the more liberty-minded perspective, and therefore it makes me doubt somewhat the Pledge of Allegiance as it stands. I don't particularly care for the thing. It's a big deal for some people. It's not for the Tyranny Response Unit. Also, following a story out of Virginia, seeing what happens with this in Richmond, the state capital, both chambers of the Republican-controlled Virginia General Assembly yesterday approved a measure that would deny illegal aliens access to state and local benefits, public benefits, including Medicaid. Interesting. We do want them to be denied benefits. But you know what, folks? I also want, or we also should want, everyone to be denied these benefits. There should be no welfare state, and a legal immigrant or citizen should not receive these benefits. But we're glad they're starting out, at least, with the illegal immigrants. At least they're getting somewhere. They'll turn away somebody from having these benefits, and hopefully the next step will be to turn everyone away from Medicaid, Medicare, any other welfare state benefit that there is. Well, what will all those people do? They'll die. Yes, you know what? They're going to die at any rate. Medical care just prolongs life. And you can say, well, they have a right to it. Who says they have a right to it? And this is a folly, folks. The government, the philosophers are wrong who say that we have a positive right to health care, to a certain standard of medical care. This is simply not true. And you are not going to live forever. No matter what doctors do for you, they have no way to make that happen. To economically bankrupt the society or to put burdens of theft on people in order to prolong life is simply not justifiable policy. Now, we're also following another story that the Supreme Court is now listening to the oral arguments on whether a city's private development and revitalization plans provide enough justification to force people to sell their homes to the government. Of course, the one side is saying, look, these are shacks. They need to be torn down. We've got a much prettier thing we're going to put in here. Let us buy them from these landowners. Landowners are saying, no, it's our property. We can do what we want with it. We're protected under the Fifth Amendment. What gives you the right to just condemn at will any kind of property you want and take it for your own public use? Seems like a violation of the Fifth Amendment. The Supreme Court is hearing that now. We'll be interested in reporting on that story and what transpires with it. So just to let you know, on the Tyranny Response Network here at Christian Worldview, we are keeping tabs on the important stories of the day. We also have a couple of interesting other items I wanted to go over. One is the whole issue of monopoly, and another is the monopoly of the central bank. There's an article here in the Freeman, which I'd encourage you to get. $10 a year if you're a student, $39 otherwise, and if you have a student in your home, they'll probably let you read their copy, so I'd sign up for the $10 means under their name. That's one of my producers shrewdly pointed out. The Freeman has been published for over 80 years, and it's been the foremost magazine that you can get for understanding liberty. Pick it up by registering at FEE.org. That's the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org, and sign up for this great publication. Read it cover to cover, and you will be helped immensely in understanding the truth, correct version of history, as well as a correct understanding of economics. And we're coming up, I know, towards a break at the moment, but when we come back from this break, I wanted to give a small lesson again on economic theory. Why do we discuss economics on the show? Why is this an academic point that's important for Christians? Because Christians don't think as much as they should, and if they understood a little bit more about economics, they would be so gullible and ready to accept every policy that's prescribed or suggested by politicians, no matter how good it sounds. If they knew something about economics, they would have the tools in hand to reject the bad ideas that come through government philosophy. So again, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll discuss some of these issues right when we get back from the break.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And welcome back to Christian Worldview. We hope that we're not having any more problems with our FM transmitter. It sounds like it could be the case, though. And if you think we've gone off the air, you wouldn't be thinking that. But if we went off the air and you're now listening to the recorded broadcast, we apologize for any technical difficulties. Here at the studio, it's not possible because we're not at the same location to know exactly if we're off the air. But there's some indication right now that we might be. And we apologize for that. We're still trying to work on some technical issues at the Tyranny Response Network, and hopefully we'll get those things resolved shortly. At any rate, we're going to go ahead and consider a little bit more about monopoly. Some people don't understand why we have monopoly, and I'll tell you what, they don't understand a lot of simple things about economics when they hear the words like shortage. And I just want to briefly comment on both of these things. When you hear governments talk about shortages or that something is a monopoly, we want to have the opportunity to understand what in the world it is they are talking about. Shortages are always caused by governments. There is no way to have a shortage without the state. In other words, there is no shortage, for instance, of Mercedes-Benz. It doesn't mean that everybody can have one, but the price is so high that people with their economizing behavior choose not to in large respects, spend a lot of money on Mercedes. That's why most people don't own one. It doesn't mean you can't own one or it's wrong to own one or that there aren't people of means who do own one. It simply means that in the price system, using the price system, people ration automatically in the market how they're going to spend their money, and they aren't going to use it to simply buy whatever thing. So at any rate, when we're talking about shortages, we're talking about government policy that has fixed a price above or below what the market price would be, and that causes an abundance of supply or abundance of people willing to demand what is supplied relative to what is available in the market, and it causes a disparity and a shortage. We have a caller on the line. We want to welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking to?
This is Dave.
Hey, Dave. I really appreciate you calling in this morning.
Yeah. Let's see. You're talking about, you were talking about, I think yesterday, somebody asked a question about, you know, you asked somebody what they thought about some of the alleged conservatives and, you know, whether they're pragmatic or ignorant. I think it's a little bit of both. I heard a program on the radio station where the man was talking about Lenin and how Lenin had the attitude that, you know, you can't, you might have good ideas, but you can't do anything about it unless you're in power, so you need to get in power any way you can. I think Republicans, I live here in Greenville, are that way. I think they're just Leninist Republicans. They're very pragmatic, and they want to do, they want to get into power, and they don't really care what they believe or
Well, they do care what they believe, but they don't really care how they get there. It's more like a game. They want to win. You know, they're not concerned about the principle behind the thing.
Well, I just love the idea of Leninist Republicans. Or
yeah, it kind of fits with the modern day attitude, I think. Like, you're talking about the land thing. Billy Mitchell, a friend of mine downtown, and his building was taken away along with Ms. Surratt. Mm. And
tragedy. Terrible tragedy.
To the issue in, I guess, Connecticut, but it happens here in Greenville. And when I tried to approach some of the Republican leadership about that, it's like, oh, we got to vote for Knox White. We got to vote for, you know, Deb Sofield and these people who are alleged conservatives. And they're not. You know, they're taking people's private property away.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that whole issue with Surratt downtown was just a horrible injustice that was done in violating those people's not only Surratt but Mitchell. Both those property owners had their property condemned by the state here in South Carolina and Greenville. Hey, I just a quick question, Dave. Are you listening on the FM dial right now? Are we broadcasting okay?
What's that?
Are you listening on FM or through the internet?
I tried to listen on FM this morning on the way to school. I'm the one who emailed yesterday. I couldn't pick it up, but I'm on the internet right now.
Okay, because we're having some doubt whether or not we're still broadcasting on the FM dial. Again, we've been having these technical problems here. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I picked you up till about 7:30, and then I couldn't pick it up after that. I don't know why.
Okay, well, I really appreciate the call and the comment here, because this sort of thing is not just happening in Connecticut. It happens all over the place.
Oh, it's all over. It's right here in Greenville, and these people are just pragmatic. They don't really seem to care about principle anymore, and it's tragic.
So you're saying that basically the Republican Party here is, there's some ignorance, but there's a lot of folks who are just being pragmatic. They've abandoned the principles of what a true conservative should be doing. They're certainly not conserving the Constitution.
No, they're not. That's why in the last election, you know, I had been leaning libertarian, but then I found out about the Constitution Party, and I put myself behind them. And, I don't know remember what Billy's party was running when he was running for mayor, but I kind of put my support behind him too, because I just couldn't stand to see what was happening.
Well, I appreciate that. Of course, the Tyranny Response Network is made up of a combination of libertarians and Constitution Party, as well as some advocates of that are strong paleo conservatives still in the Republican Party for whatever reason. I'm a pro-life libertarian. I voted for Michael Badnarik, but I also voted for some Constitution Party folks like Patrick Kendall. And so I think there's a lot of overlap between pro-life libertarians and Constitution Party folks, and we need to have a united front against the things that we have in common, and we're here trying to do that on Christian Worldview as well.
I agree. Hey, listen, where is your transmitter located? I can pick it up out on Woodruff Road and near Bob Jones, but it comes and goes. I'm just wondering, where is the transmitter?
It's in downtown currently, but it will not be for long. Again, our station is just so new that the technical staff is continually upgrading things.
Yeah.
And you should be able to get us right now, especially if you're downtown. And it's been going off because of some technical glitches they have.
I see. Okay.
Of course, we're a volunteer organization, and other people aren't there full time, and that's the main problem we've had. But appreciate the comment and the phone call this morning, Dave. Do call again anytime you can add some of these great insights. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good one.
Bye.
And we're coming up close to a break time once again on the Tyranny Response Network. But I want to go ahead and just finish up one comment about about Monopoly. If it's not clear to you already. Not Monopoly. We're going to talk about Monopoly when we come back, perhaps, but about shortages. Shortages is not the same thing as scarcity. Shortages are always mandated. Whenever you hear this term in the news, they're always mandated by some foul policy of the government, whether they set a minimum wage that causes unemployment for people, or they set a maximum price that can be charged for rent, for instance, on a building. Those are the two classic examples that we use in economics, principles of economics. Once you do that and the supply either outstrips the demand or understrips the demand, you're going to have a forced shortage from somebody's perspective. There's going to be an inconsistency, an incongruency caused in the market that's going to lead, in the case of the minimum wage, to things like unemployment or underemployment of resources. And in the case of rent control, you're going to lead to dilapidation of the property, of people taking out supply, that is, removing property from rentals, the rental arena, and moving it into regular single-family homes for sale. And you're going to cause more people to have fewer choices. In other words, there'll be less properties available to rent. And in the minimum wage case, there'll be less places that people can work who have low skills. So anytime you hear the word shortage, you're thinking bad public policy, because the only way shortages can occur is by poor government policy. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be right back after this break.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're trying to do just that today here on Christian Worldview. Unfortunately, we've lost our FM signal again, and those of you who are listening are simply listening through the internet. We appreciate the fact that you are through the webcast, and we hope that we'll be able to get this thing resolved as soon as possible with the problem with transmission. At any rate, one other thing I wanted to bring up was this issue and the idea of monopoly. Well, what is a monopoly? A monopoly is a situation when you have just one firm providing a product or service. For instance, you might have only one firm that can deliver first-class mail, and that is the United States Post Office. If anyone tries to compete and deliver first-class mail, they can be fined up to $40,000 or more dollars by the U.S. Postal Inspector and be forced to cease and desist from this practice. People tried to compete in local cities against the post office. In fact, in Buffalo, New York in the 1970s, people mounted bicycles and used their feet to carry mail and deliver it twice a day to businesses for one half of the cost of the post office. They were shut down, run out of business for trying to compete against the government monopoly. Well, a monopoly is, again, the provision of a good or service by only one firm. And this one firm sets its price according to, often in a modern world, according to a regulated board structure's recommendations. And it says, well, you've got this many costs, and your revenue should be this much to have a certain percentage of profit that's reasonable. And one way or another, the price is going to be regulated by the government, but a monopolist will always set its price where marginal cost equals marginal revenue. We obviously can't draw a graph here, although economists love to draw graphs. But what happens is when the price rises too high, it makes it inefficient for the monopolist to do anything except raise its costs in order to make marginal costs equal marginal revenue. And what that means in a technical sense, instead of using a technical sense, look, when you've got a monopoly situation, even though it's regulated, you're going to find them increasing their costs, that is, the kinds of cars that they use, the nicer desks and chairs that they buy, the nicer employee benefits they get, so that the regulator sees that costs have risen and that they're able to equate marginal costs and marginal revenue and optimize their returns. Well, this is indeed the problem with monopoly, that there is a shortage, a reduction in output that is caused by the monopolist and a higher price than we'd get in the market. But it'll never be resolved because companies always can show regulators that their profits are low by simply raising their costs, no matter how high the revenues are. So anytime we have a monopoly situation, we know there's some inefficiency there just because of that. But how do we get monopoly in the first place? Why is it that we have a monopoly? Obviously, they don't exist in the market very long without government force. And that is indeed exactly how we get monopolies. It's only by a failed government policy. When government decides to come in and say, only you can produce this, or this is necessary to have an electric grid here that's only produced by one firm. It's either through a government edict or by the granting of a patent or a license or a permit or a medallion. They use medallions in New York City for taxi cabs. If you don't have a medallion, you can't drive one. These force people out of the market who would otherwise like to enter the market, whether it be for taxi cab services or for electrical production, gas, natural gas production, these kinds of things that government gives the privilege to. So the government privilege is what gives us monopoly. Well, you say, well, can't you get monopoly some other way in the market? I mean, what if some firm invented something and they just started to sell it? Well, think about it, folks. What would happen? You homeschoolers there, think about what would happen if you had a great product, you invented it, and you started selling it, and you got a pretty good price for it. Let's say the widgets you were selling were getting $100 a piece. Well, if all of a sudden your neighbor can look down there and say, you know, times have been kind of rough at my job. I've been sort of thinking about doing something else. And look, he's selling that widget thing for $100. I know I can make it for 55 cents. I'll sell it for 90. And he'll come in the market and start selling the same widget, copy it, sell the same widget, maybe even improve it, sell it for less money. Well, that forces you, who initially were in the market, to basically out of the market unless you adjust your pricing policy. And so you start saying, well, I'll sell it for 85. And as you can see, then someone else might enter the market. A third firm starts producing the same thing and starts growing and selling it for 75 because it only costs 55 cents to make. And you can see that through the competitive process, within a very short period of time, maybe 6 months or a year after a product is innovated in the market, monopoly goes away. So short-term monopoly can occur in the market, process, free market, but it will go away always over time. It will not be able to last long because of the forces of competition. And this is a good thing. We get more output as consumers. We get higher quality products, and we get lower prices. That's what we want. Just like people who had monopolies on microprocessors and calculators 30 years ago, they couldn't even imagine the amount of power we have now in just one Pentium 4, whatever it is, desktop computers. It's just unimaginable gains we've had because of competition in the information systems and computer markets. Government, on the other hand, forces people into a monopoly position that's inefficient, lowers output, and gives us higher prices because of the privileges it grants. So you've learned a couple things here in economics, about economics today. We're not going to be able to get to this article I wanted to in the Freeman on government fiscal responsibility and free banking, but perhaps tomorrow we will. And it relates to monopoly, that is government monopolizing.
You've been listening to Christian World.
Government monopolizing the we had a production glitch there. Government monopolizing the money supply. But instead, we're gonna have to take that up again tomorrow. The two things you've learned today is if you have something called a shortage or something called a monopoly, you do so because the government has stated it should be, either by decree or by issuing a license, permit, patent, and so forth. Shortages do not occur in the market, at least not for very long. Monopoly does not occur in the market in the long run. In the short run, you can have these effects, but you cannot have them in the long run because of competition. And because of the personal incentives people have to find new goods and services at all times and make a profit. What you do have over time, though, is that when you have a government decree or patent or anything else that comes in like that to create a monopoly or to create a shortage, like a price control or a minimum wage, you have permanent problems in the economy, and it is, again, the fault and the failure of failed government policy. Well, there's your economics lesson for the day. We've come to the end of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're glad you've joined us, and we'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow here on the Tyranny Response Network.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.